We hear United States v. Calabresi. Mr. Lopez.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. If it please the court, counsel for the government, co-counsel. Your Honors, we're here today because both Mr. Marcello and Mr. Calabresi have previously been convicted of a RICO case and a substantive RICO charge in both of their prior cases that were in this particular district. This third indictment basically takes that same RICO charge and applies it in this instance, and the only difference is that they add some predicate acts and they extend the time period from the 1960s rather than through the 70s.
Mr. Lopez, I take it from your request for relief that you don't really argue that the new indictment couldn't cover respectively the period after, you know, 90 and 92. In other words, the period beyond that covered by the earlier indictments.
No, Judge. In fact, I think we agree to it that if the government wants to file a post-conviction type RICO or post-conviction type of action, that would be permissible. But what we're complaining of is that the defendants, both of whom have previously been convicted of the same crime that's being charged now in this third indictment in this new case, and that is of being members of the outfit and agreeing to conduct the affairs of the outfit through a pattern of racketeering activity. That's what the charge is, and that's what they've previously been convicted of. We're not arguing that it's a predicate act. We're arguing that the substantive offense of RICO is the agreement itself. They've already been prosecuted for the agreement, and the agreement was that they joined the outfit. And we know that the outfit in Chicago reaches all the way back to the Al Capone days based on previous decisions of this court. It's our position that once our clients became members of the outfit and members of this particular criminal organization, that they have agreed to commit whatever acts the enterprise requests of them. And they have been charged with 1962 violations in both of the prior indictments and this indictment as well. And we believe that's where the constitutional infirmity lies in that, because our position is the RICO charge itself is the crime, which is the essence of the agreement. The government doesn't have to prove any overt acts. They don't have to prove that the defendants committed any predicate acts. They only have to prove that the defendants have agreed to conspire to commit these types of acts which they've previously been convicted of.
And what if the agreement were a different one? The government argues in part that the agreements from the old cases are different from the agreements that it's charging now.
I don't believe the agreements are different. The agreements are one of the same, and that's to join an organization bent on committing crimes in furtherance of the goals of the organization, which is to make money and to met out discipline.
Wouldn't you agree that it depends on the level of specificity with which you describe an agreement? Because what you just said, I suspect, could be said of many, many, many RICO cases filed around the country every year. To join a criminal enterprise and to make money and otherwise to, you know, violate the law. But at what degree of specificity should we be looking at this?
Well, I believe that there is really no degree of specificity that you really need to look to, because the essence of the charge is the agreement. And the agreement, whether it's an expanded elements, as the government has argued that now we've included murder, it doesn't really matter, because the agreement was made to join the organization and commit whatever crimes it was on behalf of the organization, whether it would be murder, narcotics trafficking, loan sharking, fraud, mortgage fraud, or any type of crime that's in furtherance of the activity of the actual enterprise itself. The enterprise.
What if you said the old agreement was confined geographically to Chicago and the new agreement is about Nevada and Arizona and other places?
Well, the other agreements charge that the conduct occurred in Chicago and elsewhere, so it encompasses that under all one umbrella. In all three of indictments, they've argued that.
The original indictment just talks about the Calabrese street crew. That's the enterprise. Now, that is nested, it says, was part of a larger criminal organization, the mob and so on. But you can have one enterprise nested within another, right?
Well, that would be subsets or multiple conspiracies. I guess you could maybe call them multiple conspiracies, but
no, a corporation can have a subsidiary. A subsidiary can be prosecuted, and then a corporation can be prosecuted, as long as it's not for the identical conduct, presumably.
Well, I under that fact situation, you are correct. But here, the enterprise is one overall.
Well, no, the earlier indictment was just of a unit of the overall enterprise, the street crew, the single street crew. That's just a part, right?
So that's a subpart.
Why can't they prosecute a part, but then prosecute the whole, which engages in other conduct?
Because the agreement's the same.
I don't understand why you say that.
Because the agreement of any criminal organization is to commit crimes on behalf of the organization, for the organization. In particular, historically speaking...
Why does that matter? I don't understand that.
Because the charge of RICO that they're charged with now is an agreement. They're charged with an agreement, not with any predicate offense, not with any substantive... It's the agreement that the government is charging in count one. This agreement, we contend, is the same agreement that continues on and has been continuing on since this court has recognized Al Capone and his progeny from that period of time until this period of time. Nothing has changed in relation to the Chicago outfit. Historically, if you go back through all the cases which we cited, DiDomenico and the others, Rainoni, they're all basically the same. They're members of the Chicago outfit. They're engaged in... working with the outfit, which is the criminal enterprise itself. The outfit is...
Well, but the old indictment does say, for Calabresi at least, you know, in the corresponding thing, is in that instance, it's the Calabresi street crew that's charged to be the enterprise. And then it says the street crew is part of a larger criminal organization, the outfit. So your answer to Judge Posner, as I understand it, is that you actually can't charge an enterprise that's a subset of some bigger enterprise and then come back and get the whole bigger enterprise.
Well, I think
you couldn't do, you know, a subsidiary of a corporation and then come back and do the whole corporation, or a division and come back and do the whole company.
We're not in the position, the outfit's not on trial, the members of the outfit
are on trial.
I know,
but what I'm saying is, for RICO, as you know, you have to charge an enterprise. That's one of the things that you have to prove. And the old indictment said the Calabresi street crew was the enterprise. The new indictment says the outfit's the enterprise.
I understand the distinction. However, the Calabresi street crew is charged, and that indictment is also part of the Chicago outfit, which is the larger enterprise of the conspiracy.
But I guess your answer to the question is you think it's impossible then to charge first the smaller part and then the larger part.
I don't think the larger part's being charged
right now.
What's the abuse
you're concerned with? What is the bad thing that you're... interpretation of double jeopardy is supposed to prevent?
Well, in this particular instance, we're going to have the same evidence that was previously presented. We have the same witnesses that are going to testify, that have testified in the Carlisi case as well as in this case. There's possibly some witnesses also from Mr. Calabrese's first trial, because they're going to argue and they're going to present evidence that they were members.
Let's say it's the identical case. Are you? Do you think the government had carved out the Calabrese street crew in the earlier case so that they could bring another case later? Is that what you think they were doing? They were up to?
Well, I don't know if that's what they were up to, but that's certainly what they did. They did carve it out, and they are bringing a larger case.
A lot of differences, though.
Well, there's a lot of difference in regard to the motivation, but the point is, again, it essentially is...
Motivation. There are a lot of different acts involved in this suit.
Well, there's different acts in that there's acts of violence and murder that have been attributed to this particular indictment, as opposed to the other indictment, which was just limited to extortion.
So do you think the government could prosecute these people for murder, or is that barred by double jeopardy?
No, it's not barred by double jeopardy. You can't do it with RICO. No, they could try them. They could bring them over to 26 in California if they want. And they could try each one of these murders. And they could go under the other provision, traveling in interstate commerce, to commit murder. So yes, there's other avenues that they can proceed on. Our complaint is the RICO charge. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Mars?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. May it please the Court, good afternoon. Mitchell Mars on behalf of the United States. I think the issue before the court is simply whether the current RICO count as broad is barred by the two prior RICO conspiracy convictions of these two appellants, particularly where there is post-conviction conduct. I guess to address your questions, Judge Posner, this indictment was not possible at the time of the two prior indictments.
But apparently that's not an issue, because they fully concede that if you had gone back and gotten a third superseding indictment that began the day after the end of the period charged in the earlier case, they wouldn't be here. I mean, they understand that that's one of their alternative prayers for relief, that it be, say, you know, 1994 through 2005. So we don't really have a dispute about that much.
No, and I guess our argument on behalf of the government, Your Honor, is that there are two separate agreements, as we think the indictment clearly, the respective indictments clearly indicate.
You know, it's interesting because the government is usually arguing the opposite. The government's usually saying, no, it's just one giant conspiracy, you know, that we get to bring in all the evidence. And here you're saying, no, we can dissect out, you know, this part, we can dissect out that part. But there's certainly a sense that I have, this being a subset, for the pre-94, I don't want to even talk about the post-94 period or the 90 period, but this is a subset of what you're now charging.
Our argument is that the not only are the enterprises different, but the agreements are different, and the patterns of racketeering activity are different.
What's different about when you actually mention in both of the earlier indictments that, say, the Carlisi Street Crew is part of a larger criminal organization known to the public as the Mob? You say the same thing in the Calabresi indictment. The predicate acts are quite similar.
If the question is why do we distinguish between the enterprises, I think even though the Calgary Street Crew and the Carlisi Street Crew are both identified as subsets of the outfit, those respective indictments clearly charge those crews and not the outfit as the enterprises involved in the criminal activity. Repeatedly, while there is an identification paragraph in the indictments, repeatedly throughout the rest of those respective indictments, the reference to the enterprise is not the outfit, but the Calgary Street Crew or the Carlisi Street Crew.
Well, and also, you're somebody he served as a go-between for Carlisi and representatives, other Chicago outfit street crews. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to reach this subset issue. If you are going to completely recover the ground in part in this new indictment that you've already gotten a criminal sentence out of, it's a little troubling from a double jeopardy standpoint.
Well, and my answer to the court is that is why I think we look to this multi-factor test that the courts have.
Well, that's a useless test, I think. I noticed in the first indictment, the indictment was in 1995, but the conspiracy attack is up to April 92. And what makes me curious about that, can the government decide that, files the indictment, you know, 1995, it knows that these people have continued their criminal conduct right until they're arrested, say, when the indictment is issued. Can they, by specifying an earlier a period of criminality, can they, in effect, reserve the right to re-prosecute these people for the interval between the end of the charged period and the and when they were arrested? Right, these people continue their criminal activity until they're arrested, presumably. But there's this interval, right, where you'd have post charged period criminal activity, which the government was in effect reserving. So if it lost the first case, it could still prosecute them. Isn't that a potential abuse?
Again, Judge, the court doesn't find much value in the multi-factor test, but it's the only one that that I can go by to answer your question. I think it would depend on how much commonality between the defendants in the first case of your hypothetical and the second there would be.
The government knows that these groups are engaged in this continuing criminal activity. Can it just arbitrarily slice that into different suits chronologically?
No, I think the answer
by the way in which they. But could they bring multiple indictments? You did this until April 92. From April 92 to April 93, right. You did something else.
No.
You did the same thing. You continued. Couldn't do that.
Clearly not, Judge. But that's not what we have here.
Well, is there any overlap here in the conduct charged in the new indictment that wasn't in the 95 indictment?
The homicides. The homicides are largely historical, covering a period of 1970 to 1986.
Why weren't they charged?
We had no proof of those at the time we brought the earlier indictments, Your Honor. That information came from someone.
But the odd thing about the five-factor test, right? The five-factor test doesn't talk about what the government knows, what it should discover by due diligence and so on.
No, that's not part of the equation in the five-factor test.
And the other thing that's strange is that, as I believe Mr. Lopez conceded, it's not like if you don't charge this as a RICO offense, you're done. Murder is illegal. There are all sorts of ways of charging murder.
But I don't think the analysis, Your Honor, for double jeopardy purposes is can it be charged somewhere else in some other fashion.
It is only if you're barred on double jeopardy grounds, you would come back, I bet. That's something.
Well, what if the 1995 indictment, instead of talking about a criminal organization called the Calabrese Street Crew, it said a criminal organization called the Outfit?
Once again, Judge, I would seek recourse in the multi-factor test to see what sort of crimes were charged in the first indictment, what sort of crimes were charged in the second, and what defendants, what players are there in both.
It would look a little strange, right? Suppose you prosecute the Outfit in 1995, and then in 2007 you prosecute it again for crimes committed long before 1995. Wouldn't that be a little odd?
It would be troubling if the defendants were precisely the same and the predicate acts were the same.
Well, what if one defendant is different? 20 are the same and the 21st is different.
That's a problem. But we have.
What do you mean it's a problem?
Well, Judge, I guess my response
is. That's the mush of the five-factor test, right?
It's clearly a totality of the circumstances test.
What does that mean, totality of the circumstances?
I guess the cases just judge each of the factors to see how much.
Why is geography? What earthly difference does it make where the offense occurs?
I guess to determine what the scope of the agreement really was. Were the crimes contemplated to be nationwide, for example? Were they contemplated to be just in Gary? It helps to find.
This Calabrese Street Crew had operated in Chicago and Cicero, right? And then you just charged them with their activities in Chicago, although you knew they were in Cicero also. Could you then bring a new suit in which you complained about their activities in Cicero?
You won't like the answer, Judge, but I would say possibly, depending on what those new crimes were and what the scope of the agreement concerning those new crimes were. The geographics of it is but one factor.
Well, what if the outfit, the charter of the outfit, said we do loan sharking, prostitution, gambling, etc., etc., in Chicago and all outlying areas, right? So then could you just charge them in one indictment with their Chicago activities and then under RICO and the next indictment with their Cicero activities?
The same defendants? I think not, Judge. But again, it,
No. This the outfit has a constantly changing dramatis personae, right? People die, rubbed out, arrested. So what if you have, you know, you might have very different membership, but it's the same outfit and it has this broad charter and, you know, it's active everywhere, but you had just charged it with criminal activities in Chicago. You know, your predicate acts were all in Chicago. Now you say, oh, well, actually, there are other predicate acts. They were in Cicero, and now we're going to charge, again, a RICO offense against the outfit for its conduct in Cicero.
My answer, Judge, is it depends on the scope of the conspiratorial.
That's not an answer.
Well, for example, Judge, what if the outfit decided to corrupt the Chicago Police Department, then later decided to corrupt the Cicero Police Department? Would the first case bar the second?
Well, it's the same enterprise, isn't it?
But it's a different conspiratorial agreement, Your Honor, is what my argument would be, and different predicate activity.
What if they'd agreed they were going to corrupt every police department, but the only predicate act you named in the first indictment was something in Chicago. You didn't say anything about Cicero. Could you later charge a separate RICO offense in Cicero?
The agreement you described might bar the second prosecution.
Because the logic of what you're saying is every time you think of another predicate act, you can come back and get a new indictment, even if the enterprise remains the same and the agreement remains the same. And I don't think that's what the cases say.
But I don't think that's what's occurring here, Your Honor. We do not have much commonality of defendants with respect to the prior prosecutions and this one.
Is there any overlap?
There is some. There is, three defendants, one defendant from the Marcello prosecution and two defendants from the Calabrese prosecution.
No, I mean overlap in terms of these defendants. Because they have been prosecuted before. So are you covering any of the ground that was in their previous prosecutions?
There will be some overlapping proofs with respect to what was covered in the first case, but much more in the second case.
I'm not sure much more is a good answer. But will you be in talking about presenting evidence about criminal activity of theirs that was involved in the first indictment?
There will be overlapping proofs, yes, Judge, but again, the cases indicate that
That's disturbing. What if they'd been acquitted in those earlier cases, right? They'd be acquitted. Now you bring this case, and you're going to be trying to prove them guilty of conduct for which they were acquitted the first time, right?
Well, if they had been acquitted of the RICO conspiracy, it may have been for reasons other than the predicate activity that they were alleged to have engaged in.
That's fencing. Suppose in the previous case they were charged with some specific, you know, misconduct as part of the enterprise, and they were acquitted. And now in this case they're charged with a lot of other stuff, but they're also charged with some of the things they've been charged with before. Wouldn't that be a problem?
That would be a problem, but that will not occur in this current prosecution, Your Honor. We do not plan to. Well, first of all, they weren't acquitted of anything, and secondly, we're going to prove that they were involved in a predicate activity for which there is some overlap, but there are, I think, twice as many predicate activities alleged in this case than there were in the two previous prosecutions.
You cut out the activity which was gone over. I mean, so the idea of double jeopardy, you can't keep trying people, you know, over and over for the same things. So, because they are asking in the alternative defendants to carve out the overlap.
I guess my only response to their judge is possibly a jury instruction would be appropriate at the end of the case to advise the jury what they can or what they must find in addition to the activities for which they were previously prosecuted in the two prior indictments, to be sure that the jury is predicating whatever its decision-making is on things, not solely on what was the subject matter of the prior prosecutions.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Lopez, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay.
Your Honor, the only analogy I could think of in regard to the subsets and these other arguments is if you work at Dominick's and you unload tomatoes, or if you unload the flowers in the floral department, you still are employed by one person, and that's Dominick. So whether it's a subset, the outfit is still, in each one of these cases, is implicit in each one of the indictments, and membership and agreement of the RICO charge is implicit in all three indictments. It's the essence of the agreement. Now, we've asked the court to adopt the Dixon test. They've asked for the Marin test. It's going to be up to the court to decide which test it's going to employ, if any, or come up with an alternative plan. But if into Santiago Proffer, Your Honor, which we did send up, you'll see the overlap of the witnesses who are going to testify in this case. There is significant overlap. There's going to be testimony about things that these men have already been convicted of. And once again, the conviction which we're complaining of is the RICO conspiracy charge, the agreement. We're only looking at the agreement. We're not looking at predicate acts. We're looking at the agreement, although some of the predicate acts in both of these indictments are going to be covered in this third indictment by way of proofs that we see in the Santiago Proffer. And again, we complain of that too, and we've complained in our brief about bringing up things we've already been convicted of over and over again ad nauseum, and we believe that the government shouldn't be allowed to do that. And we also believe the government shouldn't be allowed to charge us again with being a member of the outfit and agreeing to do the same thing that we previously did in the other two cases, both in Marcello and Carlisi. If you look at the time periods, everything overlaps except for a period of about 14 years prior to the Calabrese indictment. So that's what our main complaint is. And once again, if you look at the Santiago Proffer, the prior prosecution was for the same thing, being a member of the outfit and committing acts through the pattern of racketeering, just like you stated in the Gleicher case at 923 F. 2nd, 1991. The target is the act of the agreement to engage in activity through a pattern of racketeering. Okay. And that's what we're arguing. Thank you, Your Honor, for listening.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. Court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.